We are proud of Ferdowsi. And of course, it's wonderful to have him. He has given us so many of our myths. Without him, we would not have had them. And yet, we either read him wrong, and when Rostam Farrukhzad says something like, Tofu Batoi Chakhe Gardun Tofu, we think he has said that, whereas he has not. Or we simply think that his kind of freedom is our kind of freedom. Well, it's not, for your information. In the whole tradition of the early Persian poetry, the tradition of the Ghazal and the Qaside, the kind of dialogue that goes on between the poet and the patron is of no use to us, because it nurtures mutual flattery and mutual tutelage. The poet sings the praises of the patron, king or minister or prince or whoever, thereby assuring or working towards the assurance of his good name in history, and the patron rewards him materially, sometimes by filling his mouth with pearls. Is that how we want to relate to our authorities? I suspect not. Therefore, that tradition needs to be studied as closely as we can and then put in its own place. Just as we put the pottery of our ancestors of thousands of years ago in museums and look at them and marvel them, but we do not eat out of them, do we? We should stop allowing Persian poetry to dictate our patterns of thinking. That is my opinion. All right. Those relations are functions of the history that these men and women have lived. In the early Persian Ghazal and Qaside, of course, you see an outwardly wonderful, worldly, beautiful, beautiful universe. Shadzi Basiyah Chashman Shad Ke Jahan Nis Jaz Fisane Wabad. It's a wonderful dictum, but it does not tell us about our rights as citizens. Nor should it. Why should we have Rudaki speak our mind? We are not speaking the minds of people who come thousands of years after us. Nor can anyone. We should stop expecting that. We should give ourselves agency, authority to read them and choose from them as carefully as we can. زمان پندی آزاد وار داد مرا زمان چون نگری سر به سر همه پند است به روز نیک کسان گفت غم مخور زنهار بسا کتا که به روز تو آرزومند است. Wonderful dictum. And yet there may be things in them that we will not, should not accept. در کف شیر نر خونخواری غیر تسلیم و رضا کوچاری. Not only تسلیم but رضا as well. Look at our political culture. Shah Abbas has a boastful pride, calling himself Kalb Astan Ali, the dog of Ali's doorstep. The Qajar kings, one after another, leave testimonials to be buried not in the country they ruled, but at the foot of some imam in Iraq. And the late Shah of Iran spoke of Abul Fazl taking his hand, and when that was when Tawfiq said, Abul Fazl didn't even have the hands. Thank you. Now, we can laugh at those, but is there anyone in this hall who at some point in December 1979, during Bakhtiar's reign, took the likeness of Imam Ali in his or her hand and demonstrated in Amjadiyye to oppose a religious revolution? That behavior is not modern. That behavior is as medieval as Inquisition, as wrong and as misguided as Shah Abbas boasts. Look at the whole tradition of manqibat. It's a kind of poetry in which you praise, eulogies of the imams. Ali humay rahmat to chayati khoda ra ke be ma sawaf kandi hame saye huma ra be juz az Ali ke darat pesari abal ajayib che alam kunad be alam shuhada ye Karbala ra be juz az Ali ke guyad be pesar چه قاتل من تو اسیر توست اکنون به اسیر کن مدارا بروی گدای رحمت در خانه علی زن که نگین شهریاری دهد از کرم گدارا. It's good to have an idea of perfect, a perfect man, the perfect universal man. But does that, what does that take away from us? Does it take away from us a full acknowledgement of the truth that our neighbor, who is of a different religion, has the right to exercise? If it does, fine. If not, has to be left aside. Now, this early poetry then becomes a tradition of mysticism. I have studied Persian mystical poetry long and hard. If there was a notion of azad and azadeh in a worldly, secular sense in the Khurasani school of poetry, by the time the discourse of mysticism takes over Persian poetry, all of that goes through a grand internal, what I have called, I'm on the record having done this, called grand internalization. That's the process by which Jam-e Jahannama becomes Dil-e Arif. The mystic's heart. That's the process by which the Simurgh of Shahnameh becomes the Simurgh of Mantiq-ut-Tayr. That's the process by which Shaitan becomes Iblis in Persian poetry. And that, I submit to you, is the process which elevates and foregrounds and privileges the notion of azadegi as an individual virtue having nothing to do with my neighbor. And azadegi then comes to mean varastegi. The poem that was read here and aptly, Chand khahi pirhan az bahretan, tan raha kun ta na khahi pirhan, is a great example of that. Can we live by that? I do not wish to live by that. And bands are not just band sim o zar. There are so many bands. When Hafiz says, غلام همت آنم که زیر چرخ کبود ز هر چه رنگ تعلق پذیرد آزاد است, he's joking. He feels so many تعلقs. He belongs to that beautiful city of Shiraz. And he belongs to Persian poetry. Not only that, he elevates it. These ideas are otherworldly. They ought to be left there as museum pieces. Let's look at relations of power. In one ghazal by Rumi we read, نگفتمت مرو آنجا که آشنات منم در این سراب فنا چشمه حیات منم وگر ز خشم روی صد هزار سال ز من به عاقبت به من آیی که مبتدات منم نگفتمت که به نقش جهان مشو رازی که نقش بند سرا پرده ی رضات منم نگفتمت که تو را ره زنند و سرد کنند که گم کنی که سر چشمه صفات منم. It goes on chiding, scolding, but then comes the lesson. اگر چراغ دلی دان که راه خانه کجاست وگر خدا صفتی دان که کت خدات منم. So when I descend this podium, you should all consider me your cat khuda and pay homage to me. Is that what we want to do? When Hafiz, who himself is not an arif, but uses the language of arif, reiterates the same thing in that beautiful ghazal. در سرای مغان رفته بود آب زده نشست پیر و سلای به شیخ و شاب زده معاشران همه بربندگیش بست کمر وریز ترک کله چتر بر صحاب زده فروغ جام و قده روی ماه پوشیده ازار مغبچگان راه آفتاب زده گرفته ساغر عشرت فرشته رحمت ز قطره بر رخ حور و پری گلاب زده ز شور و شعبده شاهدان شیرین کار شکر شکست سمن ریخته رباب زده
سلام کردم و با من به روی خندان گفت که ای خمار کش مفلس شراب زده، که این کند که تو کردی ز ضعف همت و راه ز گنج خانه، ز ضعف همت و رای ز گنج خانه شده خیمه بر خراب زده. صلاح دولت بیدار ترسمت ندهن که خفته ای تو در آغوش بخت خواب زده. بیا به میکده حافظ که بر تو عرض کنم هزار صف ز دعاهای مستجاب. به می سجاده رنگین کن گرت پیر مغان گوید که سالک بی خبر نبود راه رسم منزل ها. Pledge yourself. One reads in mystical literature about these elaborate initiation rites, about absolute loyalties, about blind allegiances, about uncritical followership, and about all kinds of unseemly behavior, or behavior that we today would think of as unseemly. If we were only to obtain and learn to cherish our full agency and individuality. I am the one who gives that literature meaning. That literature is not going to infect my mind. I am going to take from it what I want and look at it and define my distance from it in my own terms. I say this because I feel a tremendous admiration for Sufism. I think it had a real and very significant historical mission to accomplish, and it did accomplish that. At the time when orthodoxy, Islamic orthodoxy, was covering everyone in a blanket of conformity, there were people who said life has to be lived experientially. گر مرد رهی میان خون باید رفت، از پای فتاده سرنگون باید رفت، تو پای به راه در نه و هیچ مپرس خود را، بگویدت که چون باید رفت. A literature of experience. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It has so much to offer us. But it cannot again become our operating principles. It also provided a wonderful personal way towards salvation for those of us who still need spirituality, who still need divinity, not just to because they are thinking of afterlife, but because they want to live their lives morally and ethically. So I am not, please do not understand me as saying mysticism is bad or misguided. I'm just saying it's a historical phenomenon and it has served its useful purpose. The mysticism of our time is looking to my heart. When Coleridge, at the beginning of the 19th century, the British poet, wanted to express the same idea of the presence of something spiritual in the air, he made a poem. It's wonderful. And what if all of animated nature be but one organic harp diversely framed, through which blows an intellectual breeze at once, the soul of all and God of each? Same idea, but prefaced by, what if? In other words, and what do you say? It's inviting dialogue. Whereas the poetry of Iranian mysticism, Persian mysticism, Islamic mysticism, is the poetry of you shut up and listen to, and I will tell you what it's all about. That's how it is. Hami gofto, Saadi said at the end of that wonderful poem, Shabi yad daram ke chashmam nakhoft, shenidam ke parvane basham, goft ke man ashigam, gar besuzam ravas tora gerye va suzezari cherast, be gofte havadar miskin man, draft angabin جان شیرین من. شمع رو the candle is made out of, you know, when honey goes out of wax. چو شیرینی از من به در می رود، چو فرهادم آتش ز سر می رود، تو بگریزی از پیش یک شعله خام، من استادم تا بسوزم تمام، تو را آتش عشق اگر پر بسوخت، مرا بین که از پای تا سر بسوخت. همی گفت و می رفت دودش به سر، که این است پایان عشقی پسر. Plato distinguishes between mythos and logos. Mythos has to do with the need for us to make myths, to make stories. Indeed, as I'm going to reiterate and emphasize tomorrow, our universe is not a universe of atoms and molecules. It's a universe of narratives and stories. And in that sense, man is a myth-making creature. The point is, as man moves more and more towards the field of science, intellect is nurtured more and more. And so in Plato, even Plato 2,500 years ago, considered the two complementary. But of course, in every culture, at any given point in time, one of them is superior or is thought to be superior and dominates the other. And I suggest to you that for all our logocentricity as a culture, mythos has ruled over our minds for centuries. Mythos in Persian literature. And by logos here I mean intellect, the exercise of intellect. Mr. Moshiri made mention of rationalism. Several speakers did, as a matter of fact. And I cannot agree more. I think it's right on target. We need to nurture rationalism, rational thinking, the exercise of intellect, analytical mind. Those things that happened in Europe during the Renaissance. You know, it's interesting. In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. And in 1492, something very important happened in Persian culture. Jami, Abdurrahman Jami, died. He's the last great medieval poet. And within a decade, Shiism became the religion of Iran, the official religion of Iran, thereby cutting Iran, on the one hand, from this large Islamic culture which had given us the beautiful poetry of mysticism and the whole philosophy of mysticism. And on the other hand, it's brought about one of the most reactionary interpretations of religion on record in history. You know, the rituals we used to call Omar Khoshan started there. And so many other atrocities. Rational thinking, a la Greek, is going to be very important. Reason, at various times, has been contrasted to sense experience in rationalism. And human intellect has been judged at times as an absolute capable of discovering all the truths of the universe. We need not go that far to talk about our duty, our national obligation to nurture critical, rational thinking. Unfortunately, we still live, not those of us who have been thrown out of that whole machine, but many still live in a culture of rote memory. Respect for the heritage. And it's interesting, the less people know that heritage, the more they seem to respect it, or at least stand in awe of it. There are gradations of rationalists, of course. John Locke was mentioned several times by Mr. Moshiri, and he's right again. He told us that materials of knowledge emanate from reason and from individual experience. All of this was made possible in the Renaissance. Scientists like Galileo, Copernicus, philosophers like Locke, Kepler, and Descartes, later Hegel and Hegelians, all did this. Galileo has a statement that I would like to emphasize. He says, all of the world's truth is written in the great book of nature. It's only one step from here to Darwin, whether we agree with him or not. It's only one step also to Marx, because the truth of history is part of our nature too. And it's interesting because nobody has questioned the notion of the entity that Dr. Holakui alluded to last night, and that's Al-Lawh al-Mahfuz, the book, the preserved tablet that's out there and says on it what I'm going to say in a minute. The notion of Jabr and Ikhtiar. And one of the great things about Rumi is that he goes right against right against Jabr. Whereas Hafiz is a total Jabri. He is a fatalist. He believes in predeterminism. Anche ustad azal goft begu miguya ke bar man o to dar ikhtiyar nak shude ast. Whereas رومی says این که فردا این کنم یا آن کنم خود دلیل اختیار است ای سلام.
Rational thinking of the kind that Rumi was nurturing, reason got lost in after the it's well funny, our culture is a culture that has had its middle ages after its renaissance, and then comes modernity. Wonderful human beings, again many of them were mentioned. Let me mention Kermani, for example. He tried to correct the path of poetry, of Persian poetry, by example. A generation later, Kasravi attempted the same thing. Unfortunately, he went a little too far, much too far. My dream is that someday poetry should find its own beautiful niche in our culture, rather than seeping through it all through and through. We should know where to place poetry and where to make use of it. We cannot live our political life through poetry. Any attempt in that direction is doomed to postponing the idea of freedom even more. So there we have it. Rational, scientific thinking is what we ought to nurture. And men like Kermani, Akhundzadeh, knew it. Men like the Khuda nurtured it. All of the constitutionalists who thought about politics, the point was absolutely right that was mentioned, that the parliament, the first few Iranian parliaments really dazzled the world. We are a talented people. Look at us standing that crossroads of the world for so many thousands of years. But our talent comes from our diversity. It's nonsense to say we are Aryans. That's racist. It comes from all this admixture. And unless we acknowledge that full diversity, or that diversity as fully as we can, we will not recapture the soul of Iran in its most beautiful. Look at people like Rafat, who sought to bring about literary aesthetic change by actually aping, shall we say, or imitating the modes of poetry written in the West. The sonnet, for example. Again, I've written about this and I'm on record arguing this. Lahuti tried to undermine this aesthetic system on which Persian poetry is based. من از امروز ذ حسن تو بریدم سر و کار گو به دیوانگیم خلق نمایند اقرار. He's the one who moves from the imagery of the parts of the body, the beloved, the cruel unyielding beloved tresses and the eyebrows and the lips and so on and so forth into the image of a woman as a citizen, as Farzaneh was trying to recapture with her own people, the women that she mentioned. Nimaz attempt to actually expand the metric and rhyme systems of Persian poetry to make room for modern expressions, to actually allow meaning to become to have superiority over meter and rhyme. You know, In the height of the debate between all the new poetry, one statement stood out in my mind. I was a young man then, and that was, really, classical poetry is written from left to right, because you first have to have all of your rhymes and then start filling in the blanks. At least Nima said, this is what I want to say. Now, Nima was not a very felicitous poet. His command of the Persian language was not great. But in the hands of the next generation, the path that he initiated reached its height immediately. You only need to look at the poets that succeeded Nima. Shamlu, Akhavan, Farrukhzad. Look at that. Qasidak, a beautiful little poem. Qasidak, Han, che khabar avardi? Az koja vas ke khabar avardi? And it says, قاصد تجربه هایی همه تلخ با دلم میگوید که دروغی تو دروغ که فریبی تو فریب. Have you thought how beautifully he contrasts the قاصد and the قاصدک? He's writing this poem in 1335, let's say 1956 or 7,
And he's recalling the fall of Mossadegh and all that, the excitement that the Mossadegh movement, the nationalist movement, started in Iran. And he said, قاصد تجربه های همه تلخ با دلم میگوید که, and to contrast the قاصد and the قاصدک. And when Shamlu, as a young poet, wanted to actually allow Persian poetry modernist Persian poetry to find its place, he actually reversed and subverted Mehdi Hamidi Shirazi's poem beautifully. شنیدم که چون قوی زیبا بمیرد فریبند زاد و فریبا بمیرد شاملو سید من آن قول زیبایم که بر استوای زمین ایستادم. Think of قوی زیبا dying and قول زیبا rising at the equator. Those are the ways these men advance their cause. And by the time we come to the generation, almost the same generation of Sepehri and Farrukhzad, they do a subversive act which has yet to be written about as much as it deserves. They hit on the idea that the generation of Zabih Behrouz, Ali Dashti, Sadiq Hidayat did not accomplish their fight against religion because religion still has a place in the minds of Iranians. So they wanted to take one step, and they changed it, or they attempted to change the notion of religion to the notion of faith. خورشید مرده بود و هیچ کس نمی‌داند که نام آن کبوتر غمگین که از قلب‌ها گریخته ایمان است. آهی صدای زندانی، آیا شکوه یأس تو از هیچ جای این شب منفور نقبی به سوی رو نور نخواهد زد؟ فرخزاد زد. Or Sepehri, wonderful poet. And he, من مسلمانم قبلم یک گل سرخ جا نمازم چشم مرد. You know the poem. حجر الاسود من black stone روشنی باغچه است. So we come all the way and all this way in order to make this point. And this is going to be about my final point, although I have a number of pages to read and to address. Custom-made faith. That seems to be what these poets prescribe. And as I said, we need to release ourselves from bondage to mythos. The need to make myths. There are no perfect men. There are perfectly good men and women. So, Sultan Balad, the son of Rumi, compares the relationship between his father and Shams to the relationship between Moses and Khizr. And you know, both in the Quran and his narrative, Khizr is this very shadowy figure who wants to educate Musa and takes Moses along with him, and he says, I'm going to do things that you're going to be dumbfounded, but you cannot ask any questions. You see, it's the sheikh, the guiding sheikh, and the novice Sufi. And then he kills a baby. And then he does all kinds of things. And when it comes to the killing of the baby, Moses can't help. He said, you just killed a human being. And he says, look through these fingers. And shows him that in 25 years that boy would have been a dreadful murderer. That's relegating all of these things to the realm of the master. No wonder people still look for charismatic leaders. We need to stop that search. We need to start incrementally gaining territories of freedom, one after painful one. And I would like to end by simply saying the disjunction I recommend will express itself most obviously in a kind of decrease, possibly, in suffering. Wonderful as it is to have immediate contact with these great texts of the past, the price we have paid for uncritically reading them and submitting to their persuasive power has been insufferably high. We may not notice it because it expresses itself very indirectly in hidden ways. This high price is expressed in indirect ways. But it is there for so many eyes to see. in the number of victims of repression and violence in our culture, in the seemingly intractable structures of an immediately, immensely stratified society with huge, rigid hierarchical orders, in what is fast approaching an epidemic of depression and low expectations, of unethical behavior, rampant corruption, and most alarmously, in that those modern day, specifically modern day versions of slavery, poverty, prostitution, addiction. The disjunction I recommend will express itself most obviously, if not immediately, in a kind of longing for freedom that transcends political revolutions or changes in the state. Political revolutions are not going to solve the problem of freedom in Iran. Internal, individual revolutions, changes that every one of us wants in his own, her own mind are. Freedom to develop to one's fullest potential, freedom to attain fulfillment of one's fullest individuality, freedom of worship, work, play. These may be legislated ad nauseum, discussed and pontificated, even made long lists of, but they amount to little if they are not internalized. And yes, even the glorious heritage of Persian literature can be recast and reinterpreted in accordance with our needs and aspirations, if only we begin to view it as our patrimony, legacy, and tradition, rather than something like unchangeable sacred texts. It's nonsense to place, even if you are a good Muslim, to place the Divan of Hafiz next to the Quran. All this, you see why I'm being attacked so vehemently in so many quarters. All this is possible, finally, if we begin to read and process our history, our literature, indeed our whole culture, political, aesthetic, and otherwise, critically, questioningly, and on the basis of our modern individuality, fullest individuality. Thank you.